Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, October 27, 2020. Producing from his home in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, tonight, I could be officially wrong, right? At the beginning of this thing, I said 5% chance to start the season, 0% chance to get through the end of the World Series. And guess what? The World Series could end tonight, and they're going to get through it.
Yeah, man. You know what? I wouldn't look at it like that if I were you. I would look at it as your prediction would be correct. Dodgers in six. And who knows about what are you even talking about, man? I have no idea what you're saying about the start-stop stuff. So we can just move on from that officially, I guess.
Well, I guess I should stick with what I know, right? Baseball as opposed to a pandemic, a world pandemic, and the manifestation of it.
Exactly. Good rule of thumb.
All right. So tonight, game six of the World Series, the Dodgers are going to start opener Tony Gonsolin against the Tampa Bay Rays' Blake Snell. Kevin Cash, the Rays manager, spoke to reporters yesterday about the anxiety level facing an elimination game coming off an off day.
In a way, I think it's good. I mean, our bullpen is going to be that much fresher. You know, if you want to talk about momentum, maybe you stop the Dodgers' momentum a little bit. But we're chomping at the bit to play. I mean, I'm glad we have the off day, but I guarantee by 6 o'clock this afternoon or this evening, wish that we were going to be at the field playing.
He's talked about the importance for the Rays to get leads. This is Kevin Cash.
We're going to get aggressive tomorrow. If we can somehow get a lead and limit them, you know, we got some of the big guys in the back end of the bullpen that are ready to go. But that's kind of our MO. I think that's what makes us special at times, especially from the pitching department, just continuing to give different looks, consistently being inconsistent with the looks that we're giving opposing lineups. And more than anything with this Dodger lineup, just to not allow them to see repeated at bats and times through the order. It just hasn't happened yet because you're right. They're up 1-2 or 3-0 by the second or third inning every night, it feels like.
That certainly suggests that if Blake Snell gets into trouble early, he's going to be aggressive with that bullpen. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts talked about managing game six as a must win.
It's not do or die, but I think that just the mindset is we're going to do everything we can to win game six, knowing that we have Walker starting game seven and, you know, and Julio as well, as far as kind of pitching. So I think outside of Walker and Julio and obviously Clayton, you know, everyone else is in play.
During the wintertime, the big deal of the offseason was for Mookie Betts. And Dave Roberts talked about that big deal.
It struck me, Jason, and it just does not happen, especially when you're talking about the character of the person and everything that comes with Mookie Betts. So all that, it just doesn't happen. So, yeah, when Andrew brought it to me that it might happen, I just couldn't believe it. And I was kind of not trying to get too excited. But, yeah, I mean, so as it happened, Jason, the player, what you expect, it just exponentially, it just, we got a steal. And I'm just so grateful that the deal was done because it's not only helping us this year, it's going to help us for the next wave of young players and really enhance what we have as a culture going forward. I mean, it's going to affect players that haven't even been drafted by the Dodgers yet. So that's what I'm really excited about as well.
He was asked about how long Tony Gonsolin will pitch tonight.
I think it's more the eye test because, you know, he's shown that when he's rolling, he gets lefties, righties out. When he's not, you can see that he's not on point. So with guys behind him, potentially, is certainly helpful. But I think for me, it's just let Tony go until he's not being as effective as we feel he should be.
Tony Gonsolin talked about starting game six.
It was awesome. You know, it was a great experience to, you know, have them have that confidence in me. You know, it was early in the series, you know, we were tied 1-1 at this point. So could have been either way. We could have been done yesterday or, you know, now we're going into a, you know, up 3-2 situation. So it feels nice to get the ball in that kind of situation.
Blake Snell, starting for the Rays tonight, discussed tempering his emotions.
I'm pretty excited. I don't think I'll get anything past that. Yeah, I mean, either way, it's going to be a big game. And it's going to be a game that we need to win. So however I want to look at it or, you know, make it look, it's going to be the same. We need to win that game. So, yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm excited that I'm in the position that, you know, I get to pitch game six, and that's a tough team over there. So we're going to have to keep playing really, really good baseball.
Today on ESPN Daily, it's finally Tua time in Miami as Tua will start at quarterback versus the LA Rams this weekend. Hear whether he's ready for primetime and what's at stake. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show, mate!
Welcome to the show! Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby!
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
David Schoenfield covers baseball for ESPN. And the other day, Dave, I was talking on a Zoom call before Game 3, I think it was, with Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays. And I asked him, you know, to compare the Dodgers lineup with others that he's seen in his time in baseball. And he paused for a second and goes, you know what? They'd have to be at the top. He said, that's a great question, but they would have to be at the top. And you know, we think of those Yankee teams in the late 90s. They had incredible depth in their lineups. The Red Sox teams when they had Ortiz and Manny and Johnny Damon and guys like that. But wow, this Dodgers lineup, the production they're putting up and the discipline and the toughness and the combination of it, I think in this World Series has probably been the most consistent force. What do you think?
Yeah, no doubt. Look, they're averaging 5.8 runs a game. And really, Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger haven't even done all that much, not only in the World Series, but really throughout the playoffs. But that just speaks to how deep this lineup is even when your two superstars aren't locked in exactly, they're still score a lot of runs against an obviously very, very good Tampa Bay pitching staff. Yeah, it's one of the best I've ever seen. You mentioned some of the best. Those 90s Indians teams would be the other one that pops up with, you know, Manny Ramirez and Jim Tomei and Kenny Lofton. But yeah, this lineup is right up there.
We did a segment on SportsCenter this morning about that and some of the numbers that they helped to dig out. 59 runs scored with two outs in this postseason. That's the most ever. They've scored 43 runs in two strike situations, which is the most ever since they started tracking that statistic in 1974. 62 extra base hits. That's the most ever. And of course, in this World Series, 9 different players in just 5 games have hit home runs for them. That's the most ever. And some of these numbers are compilation statistics, and the Dodgers have played more games than, for example, the 27 Yankees. So naturally, they're going to have more numbers. But it just feels like every inning, that is the big challenge for the Rays.
Yeah, and you know, I would say this is a trend, but it's certainly a discussion in baseball that with all the strikeouts in today's game, hitters have to learn to be more aggressive and try to jump on those fastballs early in the count. That is not what the Dodgers do. They stick to their plan, which is control the strike zone, try to wait for their pitch, and if that means two strikes and two outs, they do it. And it means the Tampa Bay pitchers especially the starters like Glass now have really run up their pitch counts, you know, so they take their walks. And when they get those base runners on, they take advantage and they just wear down pitching staffs, even in a short series, even in this series with days off. They've worn down that Tampa Bay staff a little.
And you look at what they've done to the starting pitchers of the Rays, who when coming into the series, you know, our thought was, well, the Rays, potentially a big advantage for them is the quality of their front three in the rotation. Think about what they've done. Tyler Glasnow, who's got some of the best stuff in baseball, was terrible. They reduced him to a guy with, you know, like a 9 ERA. Blake Snell started in game two. He was encouraged by the Rays staff, you know, attack the Dodger hitters because they're not going to expand the strike zone. And in the end, you know, he threw up zeros when they needed them early in the game when they got the lead, but he didn't get through five innings. Charlie Morton, they kind of wore him down. So to this point, the Rays starters have not been nearly as effective as they probably need. And it's why, and maybe that explains why yesterday when Kevin Cash was asked about how he's going to manage tonight, it was the first time where I got the sense of, you know what, Blake Snell may effectively be an opener tonight. Like, he's going to pitch until he gets into trouble. And then you might see Kevin just say, we're going to go with relievers. We're going to show different looks because leaving those guys out there is not a good thing for us.
Yeah, you could sense the frustration in his voice. You know, he's like, we're down 1-0 or 2-0 or 3-0 after a few innings. And yeah, that's been the case. The Dodgers have scored first in four out of the five games. And they, you know, Tampa Bay luckily came back and in game four. But yeah, that's how we all thought if Tampa Bay was going to win, it had to be the starting pitchers pitching at least five innings, maybe six, you know, and riding those three or four guys in the back of the pen and winning low scoring games. They haven't done this. They're still in the series somehow. But yeah, Blake Snell, whether he's the opener or does get through five innings, he's going to have to shut that powerful lineup down tonight.
All right. Today, Dave Roberts, it seems like this is, you know, an opportunity for him to just manage hyper aggressively because they're coming off the off day yesterday. All of his bullpen options will be available. He's starting Tony Gonsolin. And what are you seeing in him tonight as he runs his staff?
Yeah, it'll be interesting, you know, because you do have game seven in your back pocket, you know. So if you're leading, that's an easy decision. You go for the kill. You can run out all your top relievers. I think where it gets tricky for Roberts is if they're down a run or down two in the middle innings, you know, how do you use – of course, the trouble is I don't really know who his late-game pitchers are. Is it Blake Trinan and Victor Gonzalez now just based on one game? Is it still Kenley Jansen? So that's where it's tricky if you're trailing a run or two. But, yeah, Gonsolin, he was great in the regular season. Hasn't been great in the playoffs, so I assume it'll be a fairly quick hook once again. But maybe I would like to see him ride him a little deeper than he has been, but that's all depends on how he's going.
Yeah, I think that it might be until Joey Wendell's due to hit. You know, typically Joey Wendell's like batting six. Tony Gonsolin faces him tonight, that would be a surprise to me. Given
so you're going just straight bullpen game out of the chute, no matter what.
Straight bullpen game out of the chute, and I think that he's going to use Kenley Jansen at the end of the game because I, you know, the words of Dave before game four resonated in my mind when we asked him about the night before Kenley was throwing 93-94. His cutter was all over, you know, was veering like crazy. And Dave said before that game that was the best stuff he saw from Kenley in 2 years.
Yeah.
And then a few hours later, you know, he's on the mound when they lose the game. Kenley said after the game, he didn't back up home plate on that last play. He made some other mistakes. But I thought what Kenley said was also fair. He broke bats.
Yeah.
Like he still was, his stuff wasn't the same in game four, but he was still relatively effective, which is why I think Dave will go back to him in a safe situation tonight.
Yeah, and I know there's been a lot of criticism. Yeah, we know he's not what he was a few years ago. And his swing and miss rate, even in the World Series, hasn't been that great. But I was looking at all the other Dodger relievers. None of them really have a great swing and miss rate. You know, whether it's Gratterall or Trinan or any of those, Pedro Baez has a lower rate than Jansen. So there's not like one obvious guy. And the trouble is, every closer in postseason is compared to Mariano Rivera. There's no other Mariano Rivera. Every other team in baseball, you're going to question your ninth inning guy at this time of year, no matter what. And to me, yeah, Jansen is as good right now as anybody else they have down in that bullpen.
So you have a piece on ESPN.com right now where you essentially draw out paths, reasonable paths for each of the teams to win this World Series. And one of the things that you write about is who the Dodger catcher will be. And you write that Dave Roberts should consider using Austin Barnes. I completely agree with you. Look, I love Will Smith. And I think that as he goes along in his career, given how smart he is, given his obvious aptitude, he's going to get better at catching. But right now, it doesn't feel like it's close.
Yeah, you know, and this is small sample stuff, you know, but what, they're 6-1, I think, when Barnes starts, and 7-5 when Smith starts. Some of that's because Barnes has caught Kershaw. But look, Roberts was asked about this yesterday, and he says they're thinking about it, which to me probably means Barnes will be there. We keep a strict stat here at ESPN on expected called strikes when a catcher is catching. And throughout the postseason, Barnes is plus 10 and Smith is minus 10. Barnes is a better framer. That's his reputation. That's what the numbers bear out. And if you're going to do this bullpen game, I think it's more imperative that you have your best defensive catcher back there. And they can still DH Smith, so his bat will still be in the lineup.
So the other day when Clayton Kershaw came out of the game, he and Dave Roberts shared a hug. I talked yesterday with Dan Shulman about how I really respected Kershaw for the type of teammate he was after being pulled from the game, because he knows the cameras are watching. And he knows that he wants to, you know, smooth over any concerns publicly about whether or not he was taken out of the game. And, you know, the general thought was after he won that game and has two wins in the World Series and potentially could be the MVP of the World Series, that now you just leave him alone and turn him into a spectator. I thought more about that since yesterday. And Dave, I got to tell you, I'm like, you know what? If the Dodgers lose tonight and they go into a game 7, and they have, for example, a guy like, G-Man Choi standing at the plate, I would reach for Kershaw in a big spot. I would come out, and I wouldn't leave him out there for, you know, 2 or 3 innings. But in a particular matchup, I might put him out there because I think he's better than some of the alternatives. How about you?
Well, my fifth item on my list for the Dodgers was do not use Clayton Kershaw.
Yep.
I mean, look, we can disagree. There's no doubt if they get to game 7, and like you said, a lefty's up there, or two lefties out of 3 batters, he's an option, no doubt. You know, I would not do it, but look, Kersh, to me, he's done his job this postseason. He's 4-1, 2.93 ERA. He's done exactly what they've needed. To me, I know the bullpen has been shaky, but it's a good bullpen. You know, we can't get too caught up in 1 or 2 bad games. They have lefties down there. They have righties. I don't think they need to use him, but I know he's going to be tempted. Absolutely, if that comes up.
All right, last one on the World Series for you. Manny Margot's stolen base attempt in Game 5 is drawing a lot of different opinions. When I was on the morning show yesterday, Keyshawn Johnson was saying he didn't like it at all. I was listening on ESPN New York, and Chris Canty was saying it really bugged him that Manny tried to steal home plate. Tim and I, yesterday on the show, we felt like, you know what? I actually thought it was fine. Like, it was a decent attempt. It was clear that it may not have been Kevin Cash's first choice that he tried to steal home plate, but I was okay with it, even though he got thrown out. How about you?
Yeah, look, it's a gutsy call, and obviously, like so many decisions in baseball, it's great if it works out, and it's terrible if it doesn't.
Right.
But he was half an inch or whatever away from pulling it off, and there were 2 outs. You know, Kiermaier was up, you know, lefty on lefty, so that's not a great odds for Tampa Bay of getting a hit there. It didn't bother me. I know you can argue it changed the momentum, you know, but I'm with you and Tim. It didn't really bother me all that much.
All right, a couple others I want to ask you about before you go. There have in recent weeks been a ton of layoffs around baseball. One thing that agents are noting is that a lot of the people being laid off around the game are people in ticket offices, which for them is an absolutely clear signal that the owners are preparing for the possibility of, again, not having fans in the stands in 2021. And look, that could change quickly. You know, let's say in 10 days we get word of a vaccine and it somehow is widely distributed quickly and fans are feeling better. And at some point in 2021, we're back to normal. But the fact that these owners are preparing to not be in a position where they're going to need a lot of people who are selling tickets is really telling about what the winter is going to be coming up. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm worried about that. I don't think, you know, the average fan realizes how many non-baseball operations people are employed, you know, by an organization. All your business people, all your ticket people, the people that run the suites, you know, that run the stadiums, all these kinds of people. I think a lot of those folks, and unfortunately, are going to lose their jobs, because I'm with you. Attendance, I don't think it's going to be back anywhere close to 2019 levels next year. So that ripple effect, teams are going to, you know, be prepared for that loss of revenue.
I want to ask you about the White Sox managerial vacancy before you go. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if A.J. Hinch at some point emerges there. But one of the primary names that we've heard about is Tony La Russa, who just turned 76. His last season as manager was in 2011. He, of course, began his major league managerial career for the White Sox. Jerry Reinsdorf owned the White Sox at the time that he was fired, and he has said that he always thought it was a mistake that they let La Russa go. That was the year that Hawk Harrelson was the general manager. As Tony's name has popped up, my instinct when I first heard it was, you know what, it's been a long time since he managed. The game has changed dramatically since then with the use of analytics. Is that something that the White Sox would really consider? I'm not sure. It would certainly be a choice that would go against the grain of the sport at this point.
It would be interesting, that's for sure. But let's not forget, this is one of the all-time great managers. Hey, back in 2011 World Series, Tony was kind of the guy that invented the bullpen game. You know, he had a pretty mediocre rotation that year. Adam Wainwright was out, and he bullpenned his way through that entire postseason. So you can kind of, in a way, credit him for what we're seeing now. It would be surprising. But if you can view it this way. If he's brought in just kind of to oversee everything, you have all your assistant coaches and your analytics staff that can guide you through all the numbers. And, you know, Tony's not anti-numbers, you know, but yeah, he would have to catch up to where the game is today. And it's not a long-term solution if that's the way they do it. It'd be, I assume, you know, brought in for a couple of years, but I'm with you. And in the end, I think they go somebody younger, A.J. Hinch, but hey, Jerry Reinsdorf, who knows what he'll do there.
And I've said this on the podcast before, among the 30 owners, I think the most loyal owner when it comes to his own employees and keeping people sometimes past the time when they should be kept is Jerry Reinsdorf. He is incredibly loyal, and he probably has felt that through the years to Tony La Russa. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. All right. I appreciate it, Dave.
Okay. Thanks, Buster.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Bye, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo is Paul Embiid. He's a researcher at ESPN who's a honcho on the show Get Up. He says he's the head honcho. Mike Greenberg says he's just a wild partier who inspires all others. Hembo, how you doing this week?
Buster, I'm doing great. I do enjoy, however, that I'm now getting tweets from your listeners about my partying. This has stuck with the crowd, just so you know. So this is now the cross that I have to bear.
There you go. Well, you got another one, too. Let's listen to this.
Let's go. Buster Olney is standing by. My friend Robert Stanberry Olney III is ready. And here's the question. As Brandon Lau hit two home runs last night, Buster, who has the record for most multi-home run games in the World Series?
Okay, the second most annoying thing in the world is Hembo's trivia, right behind Hembo himself. But you know what? I'll take a shot at it, and I'll say it's Babe Ruth.
That is actually correct. When in doubt, guess Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth with four multi-home run games in the World Series.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Right. I've been trying to get rid of Hembo for years. I just can't figure out how to do it. Well done.
Victory, Hembo. And you know what the cool thing about was? You couldn't even answer. Like, you had no access to being on air, so it was a free shot for me.
It was. It was a kill shot from you. And I'll tell you this. You should have been insulted because I tried to sneak by Babe Ruth past you. I tried to sneak Babe Ruth past you. That's obviously an unwritten rule in trivia. And you recognized it. You humiliated me on national TV as well you should. And like you said, without a chance for me to respond, it was an easy one for you. So I have to sort of swallow that one. And you better believe the next time the answer will not be Babe Ruth.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. If there's a next time, I might have to say, sorry, my dog has to go outside. I'm not on. All right. Let's talk about tonight. The Dodgers win the World Series tonight or tomorrow. How would you define Clayton Kershaw's legacy?
Taylor, you're about my age, so you know the song Vindicated by Dashboard Confessional. It's an absolute jam. And Buster is the song that Clayton Kershaw should be blasting in the clubhouse should the Dodgers win today or tomorrow, because that's what he'll be. He'll be vindicated. He'll be removed from that list of all-time greats to never win a championship. The Carl Malones of the world and Charles Barkley and Dan Marino and so many others. And in fairness to Clayton Kershaw, he is genuinely one of the great pitchers to ever live. He owns the best adjusted ERA of any starter in the modern era. And he's had plenty of success within the confines of the postseason, of course. He just hasn't won it. So I think the best comparison to draw here, actually, is Randy Johnson, whom we remember as being a genuinely great postseason pitcher because of his 2001. But Buster, what people often forget is that at one point he held the record for most consecutive postseason losses. So we don't do context well historically. We remember Randy Johnson for what he was at the end and for how clutch he was then. So as far as I'm concerned, once Clayton Kershaw gets this monkey off his back, that's how we'll remember him, especially in a series in which he's already won two games. So he'll be singing, I am right, I swear I'm right, swear I knew it all along.
And I know this. Look, to me, the most as I was talking about with David Schoenfield, the most consistent force in this World Series has been the Dodgers lineup. But if the Dodgers wrap it up tonight, given that Kershaw has two wins in the series, I know how narratives, the media loves its narratives, and it would not shock me if he were named MVP of the series. So we'll see what happens. What history is the Dodgers lineup on the verge of making?
Buster, Corey Seager, Justin Turner, and Max Muncy are 23-for-57 this series. That's good for a .404 batting average. The last time a team's 2-3-4 hitters batted .400 in the World Series, that was 1932. The Yankees did it with Joe Sewell, Babe Ruth, and Lou Gehrig. In fact, it has only happened three times previously, and in all of them, Ruth and Gehrig were involved.
What is Blake Snell's magic number tonight?
It's 50. That's the number of pitches I'm comfortable with him throwing. The League Buster owns a .584 OPS against him within his first 50 pitches of the game. But beyond that, that number jumps to .923. That ranks 47th. Among 52 pitchers to start at least a dozen games. In Snell's postseason career, 8 of his 14 walks and 4 of his 6 home runs allowed have come after pitch number 50. And there's not really a velocity indicator here, Buster. It's the shape of the breaking ball. So when you're watching the game tonight, once we get to pitch number 50, watch the breaking ball. If that starts to sort of lose its shape the way that it did in his last start, Kevin Cash needs a quick hook. Do not let this guy get deep into the game. He obviously isn't planning on it, but I would even say 50 pitches would be a good outing for Blake Snell tonight.
What is the scouting report for the home plate umpire, Jerry Meals, tonight?
Yeah, he has the plate who Meals with right-handed hitters in the box. He expands the zone down more than any umpire in baseball, and that is a tendency that does favor Blake Snell. Snell struck out 65 righties this season, 40 of which have come on breaking balls in the lower half. Right-handed hitters in the Dodgers lineup have slugged .590 on pitches in the upper half of the zone and only .391 on pitches in the lower half. So Snell's path to victory here is pretty straightforward. Just pound the bottom of the zone to offset that platoon disadvantage.
Yeah, send me all your notes because I'm going to steal them on the pregame show on ESPN Radio tonight. last one for you. If you're Dave Roberts and you lose tonight, would you consider using Kershaw of the bullpen tomorrow?
Of course I would. I would consider it not because Clayton Kershaw has demonstrated that he's good at it, because the rest of his bullpen has demonstrated that he still might be one of their best options. What I think Dave Roberts needs to do is not what he did against the Nationals last year. Obviously, the Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon experiment was an absolute disaster. I think you've got to give Kershaw a clean inning, and if possible, try to line him up against a couple lefties and don't let him stretch it. So that's what I would say. But obviously, it depends sort of on how everything shakes out. But I think you absolutely have to at least make him a consideration. And considering the lack of outgetters in that bullpen right now, especially from the left side, to me, it's actually a no-brainer.
Shockingly, we agree. Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First up, we have Blue Heaven at BlueHeaven_42 writes in, when the Dodgers win tomorrow, getting a little over your skis there, Blue Heaven, there should 100% be an asterisk, but not because it was a short season or easier, because it was harder. Beat three teams away from home and a virus. I mean, I kind of agree at this point. What do you think?
And to be clear, when he said the Dodgers will win tomorrow, he wrote it yesterday. So he meant that they were going to wrap it up in game six, which is with the attitude you'd expect from someone whose Twitter handle is BlueHeaven42. look, the bottom line is that whether you want to look at it the way you're looking at it, Blue, or you want to look at it as an asterisk season, it's going to be an outlier because it's a season unlike any other.
Next up, we got Brian Roll at BaseballBrian5. He has a story similar to one of Bleacher Tweeters sent in yesterday. He writes in, just heard the Bleacher Tweets about a guy who missed game four. You mentioned the Fisk game. My grandfather had tickets to Don Larson's perfect game, but gave them to a friend who was a bigger baseball fan than he was. There's got to be a million stories out there like that. That's crazy.
Yeah, you know, at least his grandfather wasn't one of the people who said, yeah, I was there. I've had players tell me that it's amazing how for a ballpark of 50,000 people, 500,000 people will say that they were there.
That's hilarious. Next up, we got Christopher Savage at Savage and Beasts writes in, do you think handling future pandemics will be something built into the next CBA? That is interesting because a lot of these contracts had force majeure clauses, but maybe they will have pandemic talk in them going forward.
Yeah, MLB ruled that their contracts with front office employees had that effectively, but that was not the case with the players. I can tell you this, if Major League Baseball were to push for something like that, you know that the Player Association would go absolutely nuts.
can't wait. Get your popcorn ready. Last one, we got Eric E. at Esoteric Eric Zero. He writes in, hey, Buster, I'm curious to hear your answer on this one. How many more stellar seasons would Nelson Cruz have to put up in order to be a legitimate Hall of Fame candidate?
Okay, just in terms of his production in his career with the numbers, he probably would need two or three more where his numbers are at the moment. He's got 417 career homers. He's got 1,152 RBI. 1,777 hits. He probably needs to get over 2,000 hits. He's got four top 10 finishes for MVP. Soon he'll have a fifth. His adjusted OPS plus is 133. It's the same as Orlando Cepeda, Billy Williams, two Hall of Famers. It's actually higher than Tony Gwynn or Wade Boggs. But Eric E., I wasn't going to start with this. He had a PED suspension. And to this point, the writers, there's a small block of writers, but small, it's large enough to be decisive, have basically made it clear if there's hard information connecting a player with PED, those players are not getting the Hall of Fame, which is why Roger Clemens, who was named the Mitchell Report, hasn't gotten in. Barry Bonds, you know, the grand jury testimony, the everything that happened with Balco, Mark McGuire acknowledging. Those guys are just not going through the writer. So I don't think Nelson has a chance unless that changes.
Les sigh. Get over it, guys. Come on. No one cares anymore. That's it for Bleacher Tweets. Subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast where every listener podcast. Enjoy game six, everyone.
Yeah. And Mike, just to follow up on that, you know, my feeling, and I wrestled with this before I stopped voting for the Hall of Fame thing 5 years ago. And where I got to in the end was, you know what? I'm going to let Major League Baseball and the Hall of Fame decide the question of eligibility. If it's important enough, the steroid thing, to not have players in the Hall of Fame because of steroids, then don't put them on the ballot. Or if Major League Baseball, you know, has the power, take them off the ballot. And they haven't done that. You know, Barry Bonds has been an employee of the Marlins, of the Giants. He's not ineligible. As far as the Hall of Fame is concerned, he's not ineligible. So I don't get where the writers, or the small chunk of writers, are basically determining for themselves that they're going to be the steroid police or the morality police. I don't get it. That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Hembo, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.